So I've got something exciting to share. My book, What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want, is now available for pre-order. It's about rethinking your drinking, not because you necessarily have to, but because deep down you know there's more waiting on the other side. It's about creating space for clarity, for calm, and the version of you that doesn't need alcohol to cope. So if you're looking for a refreshing take on alcohol identity and desire, just tap the link in the show notes and pre-order. Right, let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink, the podcast for anyone questioning their relationship with alcohol or simply wondering what more life might hold. I'm Anna Donaghy, alcohol mindset coach, author, and former strategist. And each episode is going to blend lived experience, psychological insight, and powerful tools to help you understand your habits and gently rethink your drinking in a way that throws open oodles of possibilities. So whether you're trying to quit, cut down, or you're just plain curious, then you are in the right place. Let's rethink things together and explore what you're really thirsty for. Hello and welcome back to the Big Drink Rethink and a toolkit episode that's going to get a little bit neuroscience-y. And yeah, some practical stuff in here too, connected to a theme that we've been talking about a lot on the show recently. One that sits at the very heart of why a lot of us drink in the first place. And that theme is connection. Because if there's one thing that we're all wired for, it's belonging and connection. But so often we are living in a way that leaves us feeling disconnected. If you just think about it, you can have hundreds of contacts on your phone and still hesitate to call any of them when you're struggling. You can sit at a dinner table with family and yet everyone's scrolling on their phones instead of talking. You know, you can feel that you're so busy all the time. Plates are spinning, careers, kids, responsibilities. But you've quietly lost touch with the people who once made you feel most alive. And even now, you know, I personally, I'm concerned about the infrequency with which I see my closest friends and the geographical distances between us. These are real fractures of modern life. We can look really connected on the outside, but the inner experience is so often one of disconnection. And make no mistake, our brains that are wired for connection and our bodies feel that gap very, very deeply. Okay, here's a thought I wanted to share. I did some research, and it's a sobering fact, actually. Researchers found that loneliness has the same impact on our health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And that is not a metaphor, by the way, because God knows I love a metaphor. It's a direct comparison drawn from a major meta-analysis led by a psychologist called Dr. Julianne Holt-Lundstad at Brigham Young University, okay? So she and her team reviewed over, I think it was over 140 separate studies and involving more than about 300,000 people, I think. 300,000 participants. So a huge study. And what they found was so striking. People with stronger social relationships have a 50% increased likelihood of survival compared to those who are less connected. In other words, lacking close relationships is as harmful to your long-term health as heavy smoking, excessive drinking, or obesity. Bonkers. And a key reason for this is that loneliness doesn't just affect how we feel, it gets under the skin. It raises stress hormones like cortisol. It disrupts sleep. It lowers immune function, and it actually increases the risk of heart disease, stroke, and even dementia. So when I say that our brains and bodies are wired for connection, this is the evidence, okay? Disconnection doesn't just hurt emotionally, it is a measurable threat to our health and longevity. So this being a toolkit episode and all, I want to get really practical because I want to have a look at what we can actually do about this, okay? I want us to have a look at what happens in the brain when we connect, what happens when we don't, and how we can quite literally rewire ourselves for belonging. But let's start with the basics, okay? And why connection isn't just a nice to have. Our ancestors didn't survive alone. Out on the savannah, being part of a tribe wasn't optional. It was life or death. If you were injured, you needed others to bring you food. If you were sleeping, you needed others to keep watch. And to be cast out wasn't just sort of sad and a bit embarrassing. It was fatal, okay? So then our brains evolved to treat exclusion as dangerous. So even today, thousands of years later, that wiring hasn't gone away. And when we feel left out or isolated, the body reacts as if it's under threat. And it's why rejection hurts so much. And neuroscience studies using brain scans show that social pain, like being excluded from a friendship group, activates the same regions as physical pain. It's the region of the brain called the anterior cingulate cortex, don't you know? And genuinely, it doesn't distinguish between a stubbed toe and being ignored in a WhatsApp chat. Both feel like injury. And if you've got teenagers or children, you'll know that this is particularly powerful in that age group when, you know, they're in the middle of forming their tribe. And for them, acceptance can feel like oxygen and rejection can feel like suffocation. It explains why friendship dramas in the teenage years can feel so all-consuming. Their brains are literally wired to prioritize belonging above everything else. So at this formative stage in life, it feels like survival. And I know that when I've made the mistake of trying to minimize the angst caused by my daughter's friendships challenges, perhaps by suggesting that they need to apply some context or perspective, that's gone horribly wrong. Because I'm clearly missing the point completely that to them it does feel like a matter of life or death. And it's not just teenagers. If you think about the last time you felt left out of a group, maybe not being invited to a gathering or scrolling through Instagram and seeing everyone else together and you weren't invited. Ouch. That's the pang in your chest. That wasn't nothing. That was your body sending a signal saying something's missing. These are my people. They're not including me. Okay, and I do remember times in my life when I felt this quite deeply, actually. You know, early years of motherhood. I had a new baby. From the outside, everything looked kind of okay. But whilst my days were filled with nappies and night feeds, my friends' lives looked like they were carrying on without me, you know, dinners and nights out and work trips. And I'd see those photos and I'd feel this sort of strange ache, like I was watching life happen from behind a glass wall. And, you know, it's really painful. And I'd pour myself a glass of wine and tell myself it was keeping me company. But looking back, what I was really feeling was disconnected. You know, this was my tribe and I was no longer part of it. And it's, I mean, you think about it, it's why we can remain stuck in drinking habits, you know, out of fear for the reaction of our friends. You know, we may want to drink less, we may want to stop, but we fear being cast out of the group. We fear rejection and the impact on those social dynamics. So we carry on. We just carry on because fear of being outcast is everything, okay? But here's something, and this is at the crux of, I guess, what we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks of podcast episodes. Disconnection from yourself can feel every bit as real and painful as disconnection from others. We throw so much energy into making sure that we are part of a group and that we feel socially connected. And we spend a fraction of that time, if any, a fraction of that energy, if any, checking in on whether we are connected to ourselves. So obviously, if we're disconnected, that's not going to show up, you know, in the same way as being left out of a group chat or not being invited to the party. But it shows up as a sort of a quiet sense that we just don't feel that present in our own lives. Or we've become detached from our core self. And you can kind of get yourself thinking, God, this isn't really me. This isn't the real me. Okay? Maybe you're playing the role everyone expects, that competent colleague, the fun friend, the perfect parent, but inside you feel hollow. Or maybe you notice that you're constantly reaching for something like a glass of wine or a scroll through social media or another project at work just to avoid being left alone with your own thoughts. That is disconnection too. It's the ache of being a stranger to yourself. And that's the thing, the brain doesn't differentiate. When we're out of alignment with ourselves, the same stress responses kick in. A clever old nervous system senses something's wrong and it whispers, you're not safe, you're not whole. And when Lauren Bernerson came onto the show, I think literally last week, she talked about this sense of just numbing her emotions and ignoring her needs as a form of self-abandonment. That's the term she used. And that kind of disconnection can feel just as painful as being left out by others. Now, I've come to think of loneliness as being no different, really, than hunger. We can get a little bit embarrassed, can't we, if we say we feel lonely. We can sort of feel a bit ashamed by the whole thing. But I don't think it's any different from feeling hungry. This is the way I see it, anyway. If hunger is your body, your body telling you that, you know, it needs some food, loneliness is just your body telling you it needs some connection. We don't shame ourselves for feeling hungry. We see it as a natural signal and we do something about it. And the same should be true for loneliness. So when you feel that ache of disconnection, know that it's not a flaw, okay? Particularly, as I've said, in this modern world, it is rife. I'm telling you. We're more disconnected than ever. It's a real problem. So it's not a personal flaw. It's not a weakness, but it is biology. It's your survival system gently tugging on your sleeve, reminding you that you're not supposed to do this thing called life alone. And this is where alcohol so often comes in, because in those moments of disconnection, whether it's from ourselves or from others, it can feel like a shortcut. Feel like a bridge, something to close that gap. You know, if you're feeling socially awkward, a drink seems to take the edge off and make it easier to laugh along or to feel part of the group. If you're feeling disconnected from yourself, the same drink can quiet that sort of inner critic for a while, blur the edges of discomfort and give you a fleeting sense of relaxation or just plain simple, I don't care. And it's seductive, of course it does, because it mimics what you're craving. It offers the illusion of connection. But for short window only, you might feel connected to others. You might feel more comfortable in your own skin. But of course, what actually alcohol is doing is pushing us further away from others or from ourselves. The science shows that alcohol dampens activity in the very part of the brain we need for authentic connection, that prefrontal cortex, which is where empathy sits. Okay, so instead of being more present, we become less present. And instead of sort of truly bonding, we just kind of end up blurring. And over time, the gap gets wider. Friendships built on drinking together don't always run deep. The confidence from alcohol is really just suppression of fear. And that little voice that says, this isn't really me, it gets louder and louder, even if you're not trying to hear it. And that's the vicious loop, because we can feel quite shameful about feeling disconnected from ourselves or feeling alone and feeling out of alignment. And that sort of fear of rejection drives us to drink. Drinking leaves us feeling a deeper fear that we are at our core, a little bit flawed, a little bit unworthy of connection, yada, 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 vicious loop, vicious cycle continues, okay? So whilst alcohol can actually feel like it's helping us reconnect, it's one of the biggest drivers of disconnection, both from the people around us and from ourselves. And if we circle back to the biology, just as loneliness is like hunger, that craving to drink can sometimes be a misinterpreted hunger too, not for alcohol, but for belonging, for real connection, for presence. So belonging isn't just about tribe. It's also about, I'm going to use that phrase again, which I still think sounds a bit wanky, but it's about coming home to yourself. Feeling safe in your own skin, feeling like you can trust yourself to show up as you without the armor. Because if connection is oxygen, then self-connection is literally learning how to breathe again. So I want to talk about the science bit. I love a science bit. Okay, so bear with me. This is actually really, really fascinating. So it makes so much sense. It really does. But you may know a lot more about this than I do, but I love this. I love this. So bear with me if you're some kind of neuroscientist out there listening to this and thinking this sounds like some kind of half-assed explanation, but I'm going to give this a go because I'm going to make it very, very accessible. All right. Knowledge is power. So it's really, really good to know what's going on in our brains when feelings of connection occur. Now, when we connect and when we're with others and we feel really safe, either, you know, with others or when we feel really safe just with ourselves, our brain releases a whole cocktail of neurochemicals designed to make us feel good, okay, and designed to make us feel safe. And it's not just a nice feeling, it's our body saying, yeah, this is where you belong, you're safe here, okay? Now, the first one worth mentioning is oxytocin. Now, this is often called the bonding hormone, and it's what rises when a mother holds her newborn, big time, or when we hug a loved one, or even when we're just sharing a belly laugh, actually, with a friend. But you know what? It gets even easier than that. Simple eye contact is enough to release oxytocin. And oxytocin has a very direct biological effect. It lowers cortisol, the stress hormone. It literally tells the nervous system, you can relax now, you're safe. So think of oxytocin as a kind of a warm blanket. It's like being wrapped up in this lovely warm comfort blanket, in safety and in trust. And that cuddle chemical, as I like to think of it, the feeling of I belong here, okay? That's oxytocin. The next two I'll mention together. They're dopamine and serotonin, and they are our mood and our motivation regulators. They're the sort of the relay system, the brain's way of saying, that felt good. Can you do that again, please? And again, it is remarkable how small the triggers are that release these chemicals. So a smile returned on the street, an easy conversation, you know, a conversation that flows easily, someone simply remembering your name, all of these give little surges of dopamine and serotonin. They nudge us to keep building bonds. It's like your brain has a reward system designed to reinforce belonging. So they feel similar. They both feel good, basically. But I tend to think of dopamine as the brain's applause, that little burst of yay, encouragement. As I say, just from someone smiling back at you. It literally says, do it again, smile at someone else, get another, ooh, look, you smile back, yay, whee. Okay, so it's literally a little round of inner applause nudging you to keep going. And serotonin, a bit different, feels more like the steady sunshine. It's not fireworks, but it's a sort of steady glow that lifts your mood and helps you feel balanced, like a sunny day in your nervous system. And then there's endorphins. Okay, now these are the feel-good chemicals that we usually associate with exercise, but here's the fascinating bit. They're also released, in fact, they're mostly released, in synchrony. Now, what I mean by that is like when we dance together, or we sing in a choir, or chant in prayer, or even just when we walk in step, our brains flood with endorphins. It's as if the body is saying, oh, well, we're moving together, so we must be safe together. So it's kind of the rhythm of connection. It's why a group fitness class feels so much better in a way to working out on your own, or why festivals and football stadiums are electrifying, because we're literally syncing our bodies and brains. So I tend to think of endorphins as a sort of the team spirit high, the team spirit buzz. You know, and it's the chemical that's saying, we're all in this together, yay! All right? So what else is going on chemically? Well, belonging, as I said, from our research meta-study earlier, it lowers cortisol, it boosts the immune function, and it builds resilience. So when you feel connected, whether it's through a hug or a deep conversation or simply knowing that someone has your back, your stress response dials down. Of course it does. Very comforting to know that you're not alone or that someone's got your back. Cortisol, that fight or flight hormone that keeps us on edge, begins to drop. It's as if your nervous system is breathing a huge sigh of relief and thinking, oh, I'm not alone anymore. And when cortisol falls, other systems can finally get to work. So your immune system becomes stronger because it's constantly, otherwise it can be constantly sort of suppressed by stress, and it can become stronger when that cortisol drops and it is no longer being suppressed by stress. So it is again true that people with rich social networks tend to heal faster after illness or surgery. And while loneliness, in contrast, is linked to higher rates, as I said, of heart disease and stroke and even dementia. Okay, and connection also builds what psychologists call resilience. And it doesn't mean that life gets easier, unfortunately, or that pain disappears, again, unfortunately. But it does mean that you have a buffer. Okay, you have someone to sort of remind you who you are when you forget. You have a nervous system that bounces back more quickly because it knows it doesn't have to carry the load alone. So I like to think of belonging and connection as a kind of invisible armor. Not the hard, rigid, sort of clunky type that shuts the world out, but a soft, flexible type that cushions you against life's knocks. Because when we belong, both to ourselves and to other people, we're not just happier, we're healthier, we're sturdier, we're better able to face whatever comes. Okay, and underneath all of these chemicals, sorry, I just got to finish the science bit. Underneath all of these chemicals are the different regions of the brain doing their thing as well. So I've already mentioned the anterior cingulate cortex and the way that it lights up, both when we feel included and when we feel rejected. So again, a harsh word or being left out can sting as badly as a physical injury. Okay, so it sort of processes it in overlapping sort of ways. And the prefrontal cortex, that's the part that allows us to empathize, okay, and to really make sense of others. It's the suit of perspective taking as well, and of being able to say to people, yeah, no, yeah, I get where you come from. So alcohol, of course, it dampens activity in this area, which is one of the reasons why drinking gives us the illusion of connection, but at the same time actually dulls our capacity for real, present empathy. So there is a lot going on in the brain, right? When you pull it all together, it is clear that human interaction isn't just emotional fluff or something extra that we might get around to if we have time. It is biology. It's survival. And here's where self-connection links back in. Those sort of same systems light up when we truly tune into ourselves. For instance, you know, mindful breathing can release oxytocin. Because we're telling our nervous system we're safe. I'm here for you. Gratitude practice can nudge serotonin. Even moving your body in rhythm, your own body, you know, dancing around your kitchen or doing some yoga can trigger endorphins. So no, connection doesn't just happen out there with other people. It happens in here with ourselves. And the stronger that self-connection, the easier it becomes to show up fully and authentically in connection with others. So let's quickly have a look at what happens when connection is missing, because if that's all the good stuff that happens when connection is there, let's have a quick look at what happens when it's not. A really important distinction to start with, okay? Loneliness is not the same as being alone. Now, this is a thing. I know, of course, it's not, and loneliness and being alone are two. Think about it, because it's important in this context, okay? You can spend a whole weekend by yourself and still feel deeply content. Or you can be surrounded by people in the office or at a family gathering or at a party and feel utterly alone. Loneliness is not about numbers. It's about perceived disconnection. It's that sort of felt sense of, I don't belong here. Now, when the brain senses loneliness, the amygdala, which is our built-in sort of threat detector, goes into overdrive. Imagine literally a smoke alarm that's so sensitive it goes off at the faintest whiff of burnt toast, okay? That's what happens in loneliness. Brain scans constantly for danger. It's scanning constantly for rejection, for evidence that we are on the outside. And over time, living in that threat state does take a toll physically. Very, very real. Inflammation rises as if the body is quietly bracing itself, you know, for and tensing for attack. The immune system weakens, leaving us more vulnerable to illness. Sleep suffers because your nervous system won't relax when it feels unsafe. And cognition narrows. You know, you'll be able to relate to this, I'm sure, you start to interpret social cues through a more negative lens. So that neutral look over there you perceive that as a frown, or, you know, a slow response coming from someone over there can feel more like rejection. And then you pull back even more. You know, it's a really vicious cycle. The lonelier you feel, the harder it can come to reach out. You know, it's like standing outside a window looking in. The longer you stay out there and the colder it feels, you know, the harder it's sort of watching everybody else and having fun. And then it feels harder and harder to sort of go back in and join in. So it's a really vicious cycle. Really vicious cycle with both sort of mental and physical effects. Alcohol offers us a counterfeit form of connection, okay? Gives us the impression or the appearance of warmth, deepens the cold. And the cruel irony is that the more you rely on it, the more disconnected we become, both from ourselves and from others. But, here's the hopeful part. The good news is that our brains are plastic. I've mentioned this many times in previous episodes. Neuroplasticity is our superpower. It means we can reshape and rewire. Even if disconnection has been our default for years, that pathway, that loneliness has carved, it doesn't necessarily have to be a permanent road. It can just be a footpath that grows back over if we decide to create a new path. Okay, we can build new pathways of belonging. And here's how we can do it. The first thing we can do is deliberately create micro moments of connection. What the hell is that, you think? Well, listen, psychologist Barbara Fredrickson calls these little moments of positive resonance. They are fleeting little sparks of connection that may only last a second or two, but they leave an imprint. So smiling at a stranger on your morning walk, a quick chat with a barista when you pick up your coffee, or a burst of shared laughter with your kids at something silly, they might feel small. They might feel, I don't know, insignificant, but every single one of them is like striking a match. The more matches you strike, the more light you bring into your brain's circuitry. And over time, these tiny little sparks accumulate into warmth, into safety, and into belonging, okay? So little micro moments of connection, not to be underrated, okay? To be deliberately forged. Next one, synchronicity practices, as I've mentioned this. We are wired to come together. We have a long history of gathering together to move and to breathe together. Right back to the start of time, we moved in groups, we moved in herds, okay? And we do it today. We come together to sing, to dance, to march, to pray. And when we do, remember, our brains flood with those endorphins and oxytocin. I said it earlier, but it's really important. It's biology's way of saying these are your people, okay? So when we move in rhythm, we literally retune our nervous systems. If we sing in rhythm, we are retuning our nervous systems. So if you can find ways of getting involved in practices where this kind of thing, this kind of dynamic happens, it is brilliant, okay, for rewiring your brain towards connection. The next thing to do, or the next thing, is storytelling and story sharing. One of the most powerful ways that we can rewire for connection is not by showing our best selves, but by daring to show our real selves. Okay, so when we say me too, or yeah, I'm finding this hard, the empathy circuits in another person's brain really fire up. So connections deepen not through perfection and putting a perfect face on to the world, but through imperfection and showing vulnerability. Which is why I suppose groups like recovery circles or coaching communities or even just having a trusted friend over for coffee can really feel so transformative, because they remind us that we don't have to do this alone, okay? Now, being realistic, you know, the gold standard is always going to be sort of face-to-face connections, especially if you can combine it with a good old hug. But digital connections, they count too. They do, they count if they're authentic. So a video call, a voice note, You know, even hearing someone's laughter through your phone can trigger oxytocin. So, you know, don't disqualify or don't write off those kind of digital meetups as well. Really, really important. And finally, mindfulness gets a mention again here. Okay. Connection requires presence. You can't feel connected to others if you're lost in yesterday's regrets. You can't feel connected to others if you're lost in tomorrow's worries. Mindfulness helps reduce that rumination and it grounds you in the now so you can show up more fully to the people in front of you. It also deepens self-connection. So taking 3 mindful breaths, noticing your body, feeling your feet on the ground, all of these tell your nervous system that you're here, that you're safe, that you belong in your own skin. And that inner belonging makes outer belonging so much easier. So if loneliness is like a fire alarm, mindfulness and connection practices are how we rewire the system, okay? They teach your brain you are safe, you are seen, you are not alone. So let's get deeply practical. Here are some, let's call them experiments, okay? And they're tools, but let's experiment with these tools this week. Little ways to start rewiring your brain for connection. First off, 3 minutes. 3 minutes every day to form a connection habit, okay? Now, I don't like the term reaching out, but I'm going to use it in this context because it's kind of appropriate. I couldn't think of a better term. Every day, set aside just 3 minutes to reach out, connect. In other words, it could be a quick voice call, it could be a quick text, it could be a quick thank you message on WhatsApp, it could be a quick I'm thinking of you and I'm hoping that today is going well kind of message. 3 minutes, by the way, doesn't sound like very much, but it's like watering a plant. If you do it a little often, it's what keeps relationships alive. And when you do it consistently, your brain starts to expect and even look forward to these mini moments of belonging, okay? The next thing is gratitude. Try writing down one line of appreciation each day for someone that you care about. Don't have to give it to them. You can just write it down in your journal if you like. It could be as simple as, I love him because he's always there for me, or I love her because she always makes me tea at the right moment without me having to ask for it. Whatever it might be. People in your life, people close to you, little reminders of why you're grateful for their presence in your life. Better still, if you want to leave these little reminders around in places where they can find them, because it makes them feel bloody good too. And actually what happens is gratitude is contagious. So actually when you express it towards others and actually voice it towards others, they often start to mirror it back and make you feel pretty good about yourself as well. But, you know, merely writing it down is a good practice. So that's 2 things you can do, okay? Neither of these yet have taken up more than 3 minutes of your day. Reaching out to somebody, connecting, telling them what you're thinking about them, blah, blah, blah. And a little moment of gratitude, okay? Now, the next one, you're going to have to give me the benefit of the doubt on. Don't knock it till you've tried it. It's something else you can do in under 2 minutes, okay? Our bodies are wired for contact. If you hug somebody you love for 20 seconds, it is long enough for oxytocin to flood your system and for your stress response to calm. I'd say even 10 seconds, right? But I'm a hugger. Go for 20, but 10 seconds is enough. You'll feel it. Your shoulders soften, your breath slows. And here's the bit where I'm asking you to sort of suspend belief, okay? If there is no one nearby, don't grab a stranger. If there is no one nearby, or if you live on your own, you can still create this shift, okay? You need to trust me, but as I say, don't knock it. Place your hand gently on your own heart or give yourself a body hug, a squeeze around the shoulders. It sounds strange, but I promise you, your nervous system responds in much the same way. It's like you telling yourself, I've got you, okay? And it's enough to fire those chemicals that we were talking about a moment ago. Now, seek out rituals of togetherness. Now, so far, those three things I've mentioned so far take up no more than about 5 or 6 minutes. This one might take a little bit longer, but it's time invested in lovely, lovely stuff. Belonging hides in the ordinary, okay? A family meal with phones put away. Sit around the table, turn your phones off, have a family meal, and talk about the day. Don't eat in front of the telly or simultaneously scrolling on your phone, okay? 5 people in the same room, completely disconnected. Seek out a friend or a member of your family and go for an evening walk. Walk in step. Feels a bit forced at first, but even subconsciously after a while, if the pace of your steps can naturally sink, better still, all right? A ritual of a Sunday coffee with a friend. These little rhythms are actually, as I say, hiding in the ordinary. They're not hard to orchestrate, but they're telling your brain, I belong here with these people. They don't have to be elaborate rituals. It's the consistency that matters. The sense of this is what we do and we do it together. All right. And then lastly, join something. I know this is harder for some people than others. Maybe there's financial barriers or there's logistical barriers or there's self-confidence barriers. But believe me, it is well worth considering joining something that brings you together with other people. I've said it earlier, a choir, a local class, a volunteering group. Again, it's because there's something really powerful about synchrony, singing side by side, moving together, competing together, all towards a shared purpose. I mean, if you're short of ideas on what that can be, have a look in your local community as to the kind of, you know, signs and adverts and stuff on local billboards and notice boards. People asking for volunteers in certain groups. Go to a local sports centre and see what's on there. I've recently started playing badminton again, very badly, after about 350 years away from the court. I played at school. I've always thought it was a great sport. I clearly have a very warped view of how good at it I was. I thought I was brilliant. I'm not. I'm crap. But I could look at my own life and say I value my health and I value connection. But I didn't feel as fit as I could be. And as I've mentioned, you know, my friends are spread far and wide and I wanted to know more people in my area. So it fitted the bill. I've joined a local club. Am I rusty? Hell yeah. Verging on shit. But even the very first time I went along, when I was running around the court, missing shots, apologizing, I'm sorry, left, right and center, I was buzzing afterwards. I felt like I was about 16 again. You know, just that once, I know my brain flooded with endorphins and oxytocin. And now about 5 to 6 weeks in, I'm actually getting quite good again in my own head. And I look forward to it. And it's becoming a real highlight of my week. And I've begun to form connections with the people I play with. And, you know, it's just a good laugh. None of these experiments, none of these things I've just talked about need to be perfect. You don't need to be perfect. You don't need to be confident at something to go and join a club to learn how to do it. That's the point. You're going to go and learn. Just think of them as gentle practices, small, repeated choices that remind your brain and body that you are not alone, that you are part of something bigger and that you belong, okay? Now, if you want to take this further, I've recapped those simple practices and I've put them together in a little document, a little tool on the toolkit section of my website, thebeliefscoach.com. I've listed them there and I've put some reflection prompts on there as well. So, you know, get your journaling out, your pen and paper. You can work your way through that. Ways to enhance the connections that you make and notice the small connections that already exist in your daily life, all of which help your brain rewire for belonging. Okay, so in summary, the brain in belonging mode is calm, resilient, open, and alive. It has space for creativity, curiosity, and joy. The brain in loneliness mode is fearful, it is stressed, it is withdrawn. It is like a plant curling in on itself when it hasn't had enough light. Okay? It's so important to please remember, loneliness is not a weakness. It is nothing to be ashamed about, but it is a signal. And just as hunger tells you to eat, loneliness is telling you you need to connect. It's your body's way of saying you need your people and you need yourself. Alcohol often promises connection. It offers that quick illusion, the warm buzz, you know, the easy laugh, the false sense of belonging. But in the long run, it erodes the very thing we're searching for, and it leads us further from others and further from ourselves. What truly rewires us for real belonging are the micro moments, the rituals, the shared laughter, the willingness to be vulnerable, the small daily courage it takes to reach out and say, I'm here. I might be rubbish at badminton, but I want to connect. I'm here. I want to play. Okay, so this week, notice the invitations. They are everywhere. If you look closely enough, if you are present enough, the smile of a stranger you pass on the street, the neighbor who pauses at the gate instead of just head down walking on, the colleague who suggests grabbing a quick coffee, don't say you haven't got time, go for coffee, the child tugging at your sleeve to show you something small but important to them, text from a friend that doesn't ask for anything, it just says, I'm thinking of you, I hope you're well, be nice to see you soon. And the moment you laugh at the same thing as the next person to you in a queue, you know? When you actually generate and create these moments, when you notice these moments, every one of them is more than just nice. It's a vote. It's a vote for the kind of brain you're building and the kind of life you want to live. And perhaps that's the simplest, most powerful truth of all. Connection doesn't always happen in grand gestures. In fact, it hardly ever happens in grand gestures. It happens in the small, repeated choices that remind us that we're not alone. If this episode has resonated with you, maybe share it with someone you'd like to feel more connected to. Who knows? For them, it might also just be the start of a micro moment of belonging too. Okay, so look, don't forget, please, to check out the resources in the free tools section of my website, thebeliefscoach.com. The journaling prompts are there too. And as I say, remember, it's not grand gestures, it's the small micro moments. And belonging doesn't come from what's in your glass. It comes from showing up as yourself and noticing the small things in life. Okay, thank you for listening. And I'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Drink Rethink.
Thank you for listening and getting curious. Please rate, review, and follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're choosing to listen. And don't forget to tune in to the next episode. And you can find out more about The Big Drink Rethink by heading to my website, thebeliefscoach.com. That's the beliefs, BELIEFS coach.com, where you will see clear links to the show.